This podcast was recorded Thursday, August 13th at 10:52 a.m. Things might have changed by the time you hear it.
Yeah, like we'll get this whole COVID testing thing figured out, like most other countries already have.
Did COVID testing make any news in Ohio recently?
I don't know. Did it?
Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and those Snollygosters who are shrewdly looking for your votes over Zoom and other digital platforms. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, Joe Biden's historic, though less than surprising, pick for a vice president. And John Kasich speaks at the national convention, but not his party's convention.
But first, at the start of every episode, we say things may have changed by the time you hear this. We should start saying things will have changed because this happened 90 minutes after we recorded last week's episode.
When I got to the airport, found out shortly thereafter that I had tested positive. So that was a big surprise.
Governor DeWine, of course, testing positive for COVID-19 last Thursday. Then a few hours later, this happened.
Then got the good results last night that the test from Ohio State had come back is negative for all of us.
So there you go.
A lot of confidence in COVID testing all of a sudden, right?
Much ado about nothing. Yeah, it just was illustrative of the whole testing dilemma that we've faced since the get-go of this pandemic. The first test was the rapid test, which is not very reliable. You know, if 60% accuracy is reliable, that's not good.
You think they'd want something a little more reliable when it comes to the president of the United States?
Yeah, apparently it was the RNC, the Republican National Committee, who administered this test. And the White House claims that their rapid test is more accurate.
But the most test is better than your test, Mike.
Yeah, the most accurate test is the test that eventually vindicated Mike DeWine from COVID-19.
The so-called PCR test that he did pass twice. Or he passed three times, actually, because it was ran twice on Friday and then or it was ran twice on Thursday, once on Saturday.
Isn't it nice? Rank does have its privilege, right? Most of us have to take a test, and we got to wait five, six days.
My wife is a nurse, and she had to go to the county health department to get tested. She couldn't get a test at her hospital.
My wife and I are trying to get tests. We're going on vacation. We wanted to get tested before we go, and it's not easy.
We have not figured this out, that's for sure.
No, we have not.
One thing that we do know for sure, unless something really unexpected happens, is that Joe Biden has a running mate.
My fellow Americans, now let me introduce to you, for the first time, your next Vice President of the United States, Kamala Harris. Kamala, floor is yours.
And that's all she had, was the floor. It's so odd. I mean, usually when you introduce your running mate, there's roaring applause and you pan to the crowd. You see all your supporters cheering wildly for your pick. And yesterday was just quiet.
It's 2020, Mike.
Yes, it's just such an odd time. But still, it was a historic moment. Kamala Harris, the one-time strong presidential candidate who famously accused Joe Biden of being against desegregating schools through busing, is now his right-hand woman.
She sure is. The senator from California breaks another barrier. She's the first black woman on a major party presidential ticket. She brings a long record of winning big elections and raising lots of money. She's a skilled debater and questioner. Just ask Bill Barr and Brett Kavanaugh. She's young, at least much younger than Joe Biden. She's 55.
I love people say 55 is young.
That is, yeah. And at least for this week, she seems to have energized the Democratic Party.
Yes, she has. And now joining us to talk about this pick and what it means to history, to women of color, and, of course, what it means to the race for president is Wendy Smooth, Ohio State University political science professor who focuses much of her teaching and research on the impact of race and gender in politics. Wendy Smooth, welcome back to Snollygoster.
Thank you for having me back, and thanks for inviting me to talk about this historic moment.
Yeah, talk about that for a moment. I mean, I don't think it was a surprise that Kamala Harris was the pick. She was even before she left the race, she was thought of as an ideal running mate for Joe Biden. Were you surprised?
You know, actually, I would say it was no surprise once he decided he would go for the woman pick. He would select an African-American woman, as he had been chided by so many activists to do. But I will say I did have a moment of shock to say he actually did it. And so it will go a long way with many Democratic activists that he actually had the conviction to make the hard decision. For many of us who study history and study race and gender in politics, this really seems like a no-brainer. But still, for so many in politics, this was considered a difficult choice. I will say, you know, this isn't a historic choice for the Democratic Party, but this is really about an American shift, right? In terms of how we are growing more into the democracy we would like to become.
I was about to ask you that, Wendy, to put this into the context of American history. We did have our first African-American president not too long ago. He served two terms. How big of a deal is this for Black Americans and specifically for Black women?
Oh, indeed. This is huge. We have talked for eons about these kinds of intersections of race and gender. And one of the things that we know, both from the research and from the lived experiences, is that gender does matter in the context of race. And so though we have elected an African-American man as president, it's a very different story to also think about the ways in which we advance women as political leaders. You know, we've been long comfortable with the idea of having women in some leadership positions, but the American public still seems a little bit resistant to women in executive sole positions. And so that is what makes this also, you know, really quite important. Really quite significant. And I'll say this as well. Yes, we can think of Kamala Harris as an African-American woman, but we also have to think about the richness of her ancestry, that she is also an Asian-American woman. And so we don't want to think of her identity in a singular manner, because we don't want to do that harm of erasing such an important part of who she is and what she means for our democracy.
You mentioned her racial background. Her parents are both immigrants. Her dad is from Jamaica, correct? And her mom is from South Asia, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Both came seeking educational opportunities. Yeah. If that's not an American story, I've never heard one.
But her resume is impressive. That's the thing that I think that perhaps has gotten lost in the first couple of days after this announcement. You know, she was a state attorney general in California, elected statewide there to the U.S. Senate. She ran for president, was a leading candidate for a brief time on the Democratic side for president, was thought to be a very strong candidate early on. Her campaign there didn't work out. I mean, she had probably the best resume of all of the folks that Joe Biden was considering. Would you agree?
Oh, certainly. Oh, sure. I mean, and that, what we know about women in politics, women don't just jump in from other sectors and run for the White House. The ones who are most successful are those who have taken this kind of traditional stair-step approach. Because what we also know for Harris is that she started in local county politics. And if one message I have to the women of Ohio, don't discount the county supervisor, do not discount those very local offices, because what you learn in those offices really can propel you forward. But we don't want to see women have to take so many intermediate steps where they build this resume like Kamala, where there's just an overwhelming amount of work there. We know that women have skills from all sorts of sectors. And my goal in the work that I do is to get women in at all entry points. And I think that this historic moment will help propel some of those activities, to get women who were kind of thinking they might do it, to do it, to jump in, to go for it.
Wendy, as historic as this pick is, Kamala Harris, also the running mate of a white man, is there any disappointment still lingering that she is not the nominee?
Oh, sure. I mean, there's always these conversations of whether or not she should be at the bottom of the ticket or the top of the ticket. And, you know, those are going to be there. I think if people who have those reservations and are upset in that way will soon get over it, because most of them share a perspective that the current administration can't go forward, and will get over their disappointments in order to go for a bigger prize that they see.
Looking at her resume, she did serve as a county prosecutor, as you mentioned, also state attorney general. And as prosecutor, as attorney general, she worked closely, of course, with law enforcement. And that has led some progressives to criticize her background as, you know, being, you know, not progressive enough on police reform, not progressive enough on sentencing reform. One of the things she did is crack down on parents whose kids were repeatedly truant to school, actually charge them criminally. Is that a problem for her moving forward?
So sure, those things are going to come up repeatedly in conversations about her. But I also think that there's a richness in how she has developed, even in the last 2 years. I think I've seen a very different Kamala Harris in the last 2 years, who has become more progressive on policing, on criminal justice reform, and brings to that conversation that perspective of an insider to critique the system. And in that way, I think she will be able to forge some important bridges. I also think those same activists who bring those critiques, particularly around policing, are really quite fearful of the alternative, which is a continuation of a Trump presidency that promotes the kinds of things that we're seeing across the country in terms of deploying federal troops. And I think those kinds of, you know, given those types of choices, they're willing to work with and mold a Kamala Harris into her, around her thinking on some of the issues of policing. And I think they have a lot more to work with in the Kamala of the last 2 years.
Besides breaking votes in the Senate, the vice president's main job seems to be furthering the agenda of the president. Do you think Kamala Harris lines up well politically with Joe Biden, who I think most people would call a centrist? Certainly, he was farther right than most of his Democratic opponents in the primary season. He's not a far left Democrat.
Right. And, you know, presidential administrations traditionally are teams. And I think Joe Biden made the comment about the last person in the room before the door closes. And he trusts Kamala to be that last person in the room. And I think that that is a really important perspective to take around deliberating and about the ability to deliberate with an equal who can help to shape your thinking. I think the Democratic Party will be served well by that sort of deliberation. You don't need two cookie cutter same figures in those roles. You need people who are going to push each other in different directions to refine the thinking. And I really believe that when we have a diversity of thought in that way, we get better policies for the country, no matter what office we're talking about. And especially when we're talking about you know, the highest office of the land, you want deliberation. And I think between the two of them, that deliberation is going to take place. We know she definitely can stand up for her own ideas and opinions, and she can tell Joe Biden those ideas.
Oh,
we
saw
it on the debate stage.
Yeah, we've seen her on the Senate floor, too. She's a pretty tough cookie. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. I'm a little concerned for Mike Pence. I didn't think I could do this kind of concern for him, but I'm a little concerned for him.
To that point, I hate to compare this because we don't compare men who have run for vice president, but let's compare the women who have run for vice president. Geraldine Ferraro, first in a major party ticket, Sarah Palin, of course, with John McCain, and now Kamala Harris. And the thinking was, and Maureen Dowd pointed out in a kind of a controversial column over the past week or so, that campaigns, for lack of a better term, ask their female candidates to be careful so they're not too aggressive, they're not too ambitious, they're not too pushy. Are those days fading away with each successive female candidate that works the national stage?
I sure hope so, because when we have frank discussions about the ways in which we have universal discomforts about aggressive women, we will go a long way. For even those of us who are in other professions, we need this to go away so that women on the job every day are not considered too aggressive when they have sound points to make. Those days are not practical for us to move forward as a nation. I do want to get to this point about comparison of vice presidents, though. You know, we'll stop comparing when we have too many in the hopper to compare, because the reason why we don't compare white men vice presidential candidates is because there've been so many, we have to really think about on what variables do we compare them on.
Yeah.
Because we've had so few women, we feel that we can harness the data in such a way that it makes sense for us to make the comparisons. When if you look at the women that you've just named, they are so wildly different.
Yes, they are.
Well, one was that's not a comparison that makes sense.
Sarah Palin,
maybe we talk about what states they're from.
Yeah, one in Geraldine Ferraro, of course, was a generation and a half ago, and times have changed in many respects since that happened.
Wendy Smooth, Ohio State political science professor who focuses much of her research on the impact of race and gender in politics. We've been talking about this week's historic nomination of Kamala Harris to be Joe Biden's running mate in the race for president. Wendy Smooth, thanks again, and we love to have you on Snollygoster whenever we can. Thanks again.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks, Wendy.
We'll be right back.
On All Sides with Ann Fisher, we cover the topics that affect life in Central Ohio, from immigration to the economy to the continuing opioid crisis.
But the reality is, if you don't save someone who's overdosed, they have no opportunity to recover.
Hear thoughtful, in-depth conversations about the issues that matter now. Subscribe to the All Sides with Ann Fisher podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Snollygoster. The Democratic National Convention starts on Monday. Can you really have a convention if no one is convening?
They're convening digitally, I guess.
Yeah,
either convening. Way, we'll certainly find out. It was supposed to be in a big arena in Milwaukee with all the delegates shoulder to shoulder cheering, wearing silly hats and waving those signs. Very, very patriotic scenes that we all know. Instead, it will be on Zoom.
Yeah, it's going to be, you heard at the top.
You heard
when they introduce somebody,
like
it's
going to
be
Smooth,
like, quiet. Maybe they'll do like Major League Baseball does or the NHL has done during the playoffs, is they pipe in the crowd noise.
Sure. They should.
Is that ethical in politics?
We certainly wouldn't do it on the radio here at 89.7 WOSU. Either way, four nights of speeches are planned with Joe Biden, the presumptive nominee, going on last on Thursday.
Yes, and there will be an unusual speaker Monday night. When you think of who should speak along with Bernie Sanders and Michelle Obama and Andrew Cuomo, who do you think would be a good fit? Well, here's a hint.
Ohio, Governor Kasich, welcome back to Meet the Press.
Thanks, Chuck.
Governor, welcome back to Fox News Sunday.
And we went to Tulsa instead of where we were going in Colorado.
Yes, the old John Kasich GPS is back. It will track the former governor, the never Trumper, to the Democratic Convention, where he will speak on Monday night.
Here's what he said on Twitter. I will be speaking at the DNC convention because I believe that America needs to go in a different direction. He continues, I've searched my conscience, and I believe the best way forward is to change, to bring unity where there has been division, and to bring about healing in America, unquote, John Kasich.
Is he going to speak for 30 seconds? Because I don't know what else is he going to say besides Joe Biden is better than Donald Trump.
Yeah, I'm curious. It's going to be the same speech. It's going to be, you know, that he wrote his book about how better. He's going to talk about his uncle who was
back at the Rocks, where he's from, McKee Rocks, Pennsylvania.
McKee's Rocks. I forget. It's funny how we forget now.
It seems like a million years ago.
That John Kasich is GPS.
The guy who used to throw rhetorical bombs at the Democratic Party. The guy who helped balance the federal budget when he was in Congress, this fiscal hawk.
Yeah. Ardent anti-abortion Republican.
It gets sillier the more you think about it.
Yeah, it does. But there are a lot of Republicans who are in the Never Trumper, the Project Lincoln effort. And it reminds me of when Joe Lieberman spoke at the Republican convention a few years ago. And, you know, he never reentered Democratic politics. And I think it's safe to say that whether he wants to or not, that John Kasich.
Oh, no.
Cannot re-enter Republican politics.
He's burning every bridge that's possible. He's speaking at the DNC.
Yeah.
I mean, in 2020, he is for all intents and purposes, a Democrat. He's speaking at the DNC. It's incredible. What a turn compared to when he was elected in 2010 against Ted Strickland, then again in 2014, a terrible candidate in Ed Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
But, wow. It's what a time that he is speaking at the Democratic National Convention. John Kasich.
Yep, but he's never, you know, the odd thing is, 4 years ago, the convention, the Republican convention, was in his home state.
In Cleveland.
He wouldn't even go inside. He was circulating
because
outside
he's
the arena.
He's a never-Trumper.
Yeah, he wouldn't even go inside the arena in Cleveland. And now he's going to speak via Zoom or satellite TV to the Democratic convention, which is virtually in Milwaukee, but not really.
It's virtually in Milwaukee.
Well, it was supposed to be in Milwaukee.
Is Green Bay virtually in Milwaukee? Is
strange times.
Yeah, when you talk to the people who covered him in the State House for years, he is he was not a Democrat.
No,
that's for sure.
No.
Wow. All right. Anyway, time now for our Snollygoster of the Week award. Could go to John Kasich, honestly, but this takes some explaining, so bear with us.
As you know, we're going to have a lot of mail-in voting this year because of COVID. So voting rights advocates and Democrats want to make it as easy as possible for voters to cast those early mail-in ballots. They want Secretary of State Frank LaRose to allow counties to put collection boxes, kind of like locked mailboxes, in convenient locations so folks can drop off their ballots.
And this week, Frank LaRose, a Republican, said he cannot do that. He is unclear about state law. He asked the Attorney General Dave Yost, also a Republican, to give him a legal ruling on this, and that for some reason never came. And LaRose says it's now too late because early voting begins in 2 months. Yost's office told the Dispatch that they were ready to issue the opinion. Then LaRose withdrew his request.
LaRose also says the legislature could have changed the law to allow the extra boxes as they did for the spring primary. So we've done this before.
So whether it was bureaucratic inaction or shrewd delay tactics, our Snollygoster of the Week goes to Ohio Secretary of State Frank LaRose, a former guest on Snollygoster, with an assist from Attorney General Dave Yost for, in essence, passing the buck around and, in the end, doing nothing to increase the number of ballot drop boxes around Ohio.
So one per county at the County Board of Elections.
So do you think LaRose punting to the legislature will work? You see the legislature?
No. They're not going to be back for another 3 or 4 weeks.
No, they're not. Well, they wouldn't do anything anyway. No. That's not going to happen.
It's the old four corners offense there in college basketball, passing the ball around.
It's not my fault. It's your fault. Yeah. Just do that for 3 weeks and then nothing. Either way, that will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster. If you have a suggestion for next week's Snollygoster of the Week, you can send it to snollygoster@wosu.org. As always, thanks to our student producer, Jack Long, our audio producer, Eric French, and our web producer, Michael DeBonis. Until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.